HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 150, recorded live Saturday, February 14th, 2009. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. And by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Uncle Bob Martin and gets his response to the fluster over show 145.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. A little bit of an unusual show this week. We've got Uncle Bob back on the show from just a couple of weeks ago. How are you, sir?
I'm just fine, thank you.
Well, we had some interesting response from the show on solid principles. I thought it was a pretty straightforward show, and I didn't think it was particularly controversial, but there were a number of interesting developments since that show.
Yeah, there have been. quite a fuss got raised.
Why was that controversial?
So, I guess one of the followers of your show is Joel Spolsky, and he was listening to it at some point, and I think he heard us talking about the solid principles, and it somehow triggered something in his mind. It didn't resonate particularly well, because he went on Stack Overflow podcast, number 38, for those who are interested, and made some rather startling statements, which, by the way, he has apologized for, and he's a gentleman, he was very respectful about it. But he said at the time that, well, my goodness, these principles sound awfully bureaucratic, and frankly, only somebody who doesn't code a lot could say something like that. And you can imagine that I didn't take that particularly well. that was something that pushed my button. So after that, there was a blog war, and Twitter was all a fuss about all the stuff that was going on, and the blogosphere, of our particular blogosphere, was quite activated. And so I contacted Joel, and we did a Stack Overflow number 41 together. And that was a lot of fun. We had a great time with that.
Okay. So it's all genial, but I noticed in your comments, it was widely varied. There were some people that were saying that that you, sir, were out of touch and were not being practical. There were people on the other side that were saying that the Stack Overflow website was, slapped together with no principles at all. I give a lot of respect to people who I like to use success as a metric. So I have no idea what the code for Stack Overflow looks like, but he did get it live. We'll see if it's maintainable or not. How do you reconcile these different and very polarized opinions on each side?
Oh, I don't know. Did you watch the election?
I'm surprised there's controversy at all. I mean, principles are not commandments.
No, the principles, of course, aren't commandments. And I think Joel kind of took it from the point of view that, oh my God, people listening to this might actually think that they have to do this all the time. And that's certainly not the case. I mean, the principles are heuristics. They are guidelines. They're an attempt to categorize things about code that in general are good. But it would be awful if someone took those principles and just practiced them by rote without giving any thought to them. And I really think that was the thought that Joel was following. You can't just follow these principles. Although it did annoy me that he thought that I hadn't written any code. Again, he apologized for that. So I think we're okay there. And you're right. I mean, the Stack Overflow site, I haven't seen the code for the site, and I was very taken aback by Jeff's statement that, quality just doesn't matter. But he explained that well, and he went on to say that, well, there are axes of quality and so forth. The point is that he recently moved that site, moved all the servers, and the exercise went particularly well, which implies that there's some some high degree of quality involved with that, with the engineering of that site. So I don't actually think that he's, you know, slapdashing code together in a kind of hacker's paradise. I think that Stack Overflow has probably done very well. I'm sure that Fogbugs has done very well. Also, I think these guys really do feel like quality is important. But in their statements, they captured a mindset which somehow rubs me the wrong way. And that mindset is that the most important thing is to get done. I'm not sure they believe that, but I think the most important thing is to get done well. I actually think that getting done well is faster than getting done by any means at all. I think the best way to get done is to make sure that the code that you produce is the best possible code you can produce, that the designs are as robust as they can be, that you have put the thought into it that really matters. And that way you will get done faster than if you rush. And this is something that software developers really need to internalize, because we are often caught by the need to move quickly. And so we will make a mess in the name of moving quickly without realizing that the mess is the thing that makes us late.
Well, there's always that sense of, I'll get back to that. And even 20 years in, I'm still, that's such an attractive concept that, oh yeah, well, I'll just, you know, to do, and then I'll be right back. I never seem to come back, though.
And, you know, this is an age-old problem. People have been rushing through things probably since people were. So we have old adages that say, slow and steady wins the race, instead of dashing as fast as you possibly can. So, ancient history would tell us that there's something to be said for taking your time and doing things well. Another old adage, anything worth doing is worth doing well. There's a reason for those old things. People who got burnt by taking the shortcuts and then come back and said, well, you know, it's probably just better to do it right instead of rushing like crazy.
Now, there was an interesting blog post by one of my team members named Rob Connery in response to this whole thing. And before Rob was a geek, he was a geophysicist, and he kind of talked about how he went from being an apprentice to being a journeyman and kind of moved his way up. And there was a really excellent comment within his larger post about another apprentice who went through the process, and he spent 8 years as an electrician and had some very interesting anecdotes about how he avoided basically getting killed by listening to his mentor. And the formality of this apprentice journeyman process, while pretty much anybody can jump out of school and whip out code. Is there a direct analogy between that? I mean, I know that there's an excellent book called The Software Architect's Profession that draws an absolutely direct allegory between software architecture and building architecture, and people find using building codes and things like that a very attractive parallel story to tell. Is it that simple?
Well, I think simple is a very loaded word in this case. I do think, however, that we have a big problem, which is that people do come out of school and they're thrown into a room and expected to be able to write really great code. And there's very little of the mentorship or apprenticeship or guidance given. Where it is given, it's proven to work extremely well. If you have a group of young developers or students, and you put them under the care of a senior mentor, a senior programmer, and they program together and they work together, those students will learn a tremendous amount and become much better software developers and software engineers because of it. We see this all through various kinds of industries. The doctors practice this, lawyers practice this, martial artists practice this. We have not yet internalized this as part of our profession, but I think it's something that will have to happen. Did you read Pete McBreen's book from, 7, 8 years ago, called Software Craftsmanship, where he proposed the whole apprenticeship journeyman yes. model.
Yes. And that model is something I'm having trouble getting my mind around, because if you draw the if you kind of draw a parallel again, and let's just say somebody, and again, I'm not meaning to impugn people who didn't go to college, but let's just take this to its kind of ridiculous conclusion. Guy drops out of high school, decides to become an electrician, eschews the apprenticeship program, doesn't talk to the union, decides to just start putting wires in houses. You know, eventually he'll get caught up with. Same thing applies with lawyers and doctors. I can't just decide that I'm going to be a doctor, and then when another doctor with 20 years experience says, "Hey, you didn't go through a residency, you didn't get your PhD," the young doctor doesn't get to go and say, "Hey, says you, I'm awesome, I have natural talent. School's not for me, man." That same story works in the software industry, except it's allowed.
Well, it is allowed. We haven't really internalized the idea that software development skills are acquired over a long period of time. And part of the reason for that, I think, is that writing your first program is just so easy. For some of us, some people are just born with this skill where they can string logical statements together and can write programs that do things, but they don't recognize that it takes a good long time to figure out what a good structure for software is and how to subdivide systems into modules and how to manage the dependencies between those modules. There's a lot of skill involved there. And there's a lot of skill involved with the negotiation with customers and the vetting of requirements and the writing of tests. There's a huge body of knowledge and a set of skills that needs to be acquired. College doesn't even begin to approach that. In fact, most of the graduates are just barely able to survive in a corporate environment and certainly should not be thrown into the fire of building huge systems without appropriate guidance.
Yeah, I agree with that. I taught, I was a professor at a state school for a while, and I taught a 400-level C-sharp class, and I was pretty surprised, regardless of the age of the students, I was pretty surprised that they had really no background in much of anything other than the syntax of the language and then a couple of theory classes on operating system design. And, you know, they'd practiced Minix, but when it got time to start doing TDD and thinking about software holistically, it was not within their makeup. They were not the entire scholastic system had failed them, at least at the state level.
Well, and you can say that it failed them. And I think in many cases, the scholastic system does fail in software development in particular. But on the other hand, how is a college supposed to give the requisite experience to a set of students? This experience that you need to be a really good software developer is not something you can acquire over a curriculum, a four-year curriculum, especially if you're taking other courses at the same time. The knowledge to become a good software developer involves holding in your hands the fate of a project or the fate of a company, dealing with decisions that are going to be very consequential to the project, to the company. Usually you don't get that kind of experience in school. Working in a large team, coordinating a huge software effort, seeing the problems of deploying a system and then watching as it crashes and burns and all the field service people go crazy and they're coming to you, looking at you going, "What the hell just happened?" And you've got to solve it fast. And those kinds of things usually schools don't approach.
Hi, this is Scott coming at you from another place and time. Are you looking for an object relational mapping tool for mission-critical projects using Link and .NET? I wanted to share with you Genome. It's specifically designed for developing .NET enterprise applications. Genome is a mature Link-integrated ORM tool. It's been employed in numerous large-scale projects over the last 6 years. Genome was created for the .NET platform as opposed to being a port from Java, and it's thrived on platform innovation since .NET 1.0. Genome has supported Link since its CTP release in May of 2006. It offers several unique features, such as encapsulation and reuse of link queries and expressions. you can really fully harness the power of Link while benefiting from your database platform's unique features. Compose complex Link queries, decompose the query logic in your domain model. Link supports all the major database platforms you find in enterprise environments like SQL Server, but also Oracle and IBM DB2. You can find out more about how Genome integrates tightly with Visual Studio and what tools Genome offers to reduce development time at tinyurl.com/trygenome, G-E-N-O-M-E, where you can also download a free and fully functional trial version. I hope you enjoy it.
Are we missing a sense of stewardship, of respect for the power that software engineering kind of provides us?
Oh, certainly, I think we are. And so the analogy I draw very often is the analogy of a doctor. You would not take someone out of medical school and ask them to remove an appendix right off the bat. You know, they'd better watch somebody do it. They'd better assist someone do it. They should probably do that kind of assistance several times. They should see what can go wrong. They should see the demeanor of the professional and how he responds to issues and crises. They should see the process and the way the people work in the OR. And eventually, he should pick up a scalpel, but not right off the bat. So if for the software developer, it should be the same thing. Now you come into a team where the team is supporting a large and significant project, and no way should the person be given a module, a responsibility for a module. It's critical to the operation of that system. Every line of code that the new person writes should be looked at by the more mature members of the team, and guidance should be provided. In my world, a fair bit of pair programming should be done. Step by step, you should walk through with the new people how to build the system and how to debug it and how to run the tests and where to go to get this information and who to talk to get that information, so that they are gradually brought in and given the expertise to actually work in the team environment of the project.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have two questions then. My first one is that when I have dealt with talented young people, and when I say young, I don't necessarily mean age. I mean young in the career. They might be 55 and have 3 years into the business. So when I deal with talented, programmers, I get into what I call says you architecture discussions, where one who believes that they know, myself or someone who's a fairly senior guy, says something, and the other guy's like, nah, says you, I don't think so. It seems like the discussion between you and Joel and Jeff, all people who have been doing this for a non-trivial amount of time, it kind of fell into a, says you, kind of a situation. Well, with more concrete things like medicine and being an electrician, it seems like there's a little bit less of that. Are we just being elitist old dudes?
Well, I certainly am.
Are we just trying to hold the kids down,
There is something to be said for the youngsters going off and burning themselves in less critical environments, but I don't think so. I don't think we're just elitist old dudes trying to hold the kids down.
Well, I worked at a company, and a young man wanted to know why he wasn't a senior developer, and I asked him how long he'd worked here. He'd worked there 3 years.
Yeah, okay, senior.
You know, and that's a very common story. Hey, think about it. In software engineering, because of the speed of the iteration of the technology, if you've got 5 years in any technology, you're probably either very good or you've at least been slapping the keyboard for a while. People don't have the patience to wait through an apprenticeship.
Somebody told me once, and it was a very long time ago, that the break point for being experienced, where you can use the word experience with authority, is 5 years. I think that's probably true. If you have been in an industrial or a professional environment for 5 years, you can then say that you're experienced. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, not really very experienced. You may have had some experiences, but you probably haven't faced enough issues to really deal with something effectively on your own, efficiently. Now, certain people get through it faster than that, and certain people never get through it, but I think that's probably a good average. Our industry does a disservice to people because there's no consistent dual ladder. In a lot of cases, the career path is a couple of years slinging code, a couple of years leading a team, and after that, I'm a manager. And once you're a manager, you never write code again. I think this is dead wrong. I think it's the wrong approach for our industry altogether. That if you are really serious about your profession, you're going to be slinging code for 30, 40 years. Doctors who are, surgeons, stay surgeons, lawyers, stay lawyers. Some of them go off into a management track, but most of them keep their craft.
But we burn out.
I haven't.
I mean, I don't know about you, but I mean, this is year 17 for me, and my hands hurt.
You mean carpal tunnel?
Well, I mean, I don't know if it's carpal tunnel, but I'm just saying that surgeons have the same problem. It's just slapping the keyboard for 20 years is painful. And there's also there's a certain amount of kind of self-objectivity one has to develop. Otherwise, they can become the old dude with the beard who thinks that everything needs to be done the way it was done in the 70s. Well, maybe there is a new technique or some new revolution that's happening that I'm just not seeing because of I'm letting my years of experience blind me.
Yeah, well, then that's clearly an issue, and certainly that does happen. Of course, a professional doesn't do that.
That's a very interesting point. You're pulling out the word professional and kind of capitalizing it verbally. That the difference between a software professional and maybe just a code slinger might be what we're talking about here.
Well, sure. Someone who is dedicated to his craft is going to stay up with all the latest technology to the best of his ability. Guys my age are still learning Ruby and still learning Scala and F-sharp and all this stuff that's coming out now and trying to get their arms around all this new technology. Because it's important. You have to stay with it. And, you can imagine a doctor, right? The doctors better be keeping up with the latest technology. They better be learning the newest techniques. Otherwise, their patients are going to go somewhere else.
Well, and ultimately, they have to care. And I think that's the number one thing when I want to pick who I'm going to work with. I want someone to care. And that's the difference between a craftsman and someone who's just not. I mean, I think the same thing applies with woodworking. If someone's just wakes up excited about what they're going to do that day, what project they're working on, I think they're more likely to be a craftsman than not.
Well, and that's certainly in my case, right? I've been writing code for over, 40 years, but I wake up in the morning and think, okay, I got to get this feature into Fitness Now. And I'm just, dying to get my hands on the keyboard so that I can add more functionality and more code and see that system grow into something better than it is already.
Okay, well, so let's take what we've talked about and try to apply it back to the situation with Joel and with Jeff. I mean, Joel has a successful and non-trivially large company, so he has you can definitely point at him and say there is a person who has built a successful software company. Who may not agree with some of the decisions he's made technically. Jeff appears to be in the direction of a successful software startup. He's put together something that is definitely a game changer of some kind. Again, in both cases, we don't know what techniques and what code Joel used, nor do we really know what Jeff used. But if they eschew some of the principles that you're kind of espousing, but they have measured business success, who are we to criticize?
Oh, and we are. I wouldn't criticize them at all, as long as they're maintaining that success. I was, concerned by Jeff's statement that quality doesn't really matter all that much in this. I'm still actually concerned about that one. I'm not quite sure I can get my arms around what his justification for it. But I honestly don't think he believes it that way, because he's developing a system that seems to be very high quality. I've looked around Stack Overflow. It's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe that's just talk show banter between, two guys that like kind of shooting the poop.
Yeah, well, I think that is, and they certainly do the Stack Overflow podcast that way. And it's two guys in a bar just sitting, and you happen to have a camera on them, and they barely even know it, or a microphone. There's a risk in there, because barroom banter can get a little far afield, which happened in 38.
Well, certainly. I mean, making a small kind of political parallel, almost all of the political talk shows get into trouble when it goes from being analytical to being just kind of, let's just chat, and the banter kind of builds up and it builds up and builds up, and then somebody says something stupid, and then they apologize for it the next day.
Yeah. Although, you know, at those cusps, interesting things happen. So we wouldn't be doing this, right?
That is true. Although my favorite Quentin Tarantino quote is that he who is most likely to make declarative statements is most likely to be called a fool in retrospect.
Yeah, well.
So I don't know. One doesn't want to necessarily equivocate too much, but at the same time, it seems like the solid principles, while not right for every single moment of my life, seem to be a fairly straightforward kind of thing I might want to laminate and put on the wall, along with a series of other principles that I've learned over the years.
Did you see the motivational posters?
Well, but at the same time, Jeff made a link bait inflammatory post about Ferengi programmers, making a reference to the Ferengis of Star Trek, who used to have hundreds and hundreds of rules that would guide their behavior. And I'm not quite sure how he took the 5 rules of solid and a couple of sub rules and turned it into the 285 rules of acquisition. I thought that was kind of a yelling fire in a crowded theater.
Yes, it was an interesting post. I read that one in particular. And he made the point to be a painter. You don't read the rules on the paint can. The rules on the paint can don't teach you how to be a good painter, which I think is true, right? And the rules on the paint can don't give you any talent. On the other hand, I think all good painters know the rules on the paint can.
Exactly. I mean, my mother was a house painter, and the very first time I helped her paint a house, we read the rules in the paint can. It doesn't necessarily mean you need to obsess about them for 40 years, but it does mean that you need to know them. Day one, step one, read the rules in the paint can.
So did you see the, I don't know if this happened because of the podcast, but someone has done motivational posters for the solid principle. Oh yeah, they're pretty good. So all the solid principles are there, and they're in the form of, you know, those funny pictures you hang on the wall at people climbing rocks and
Right. Or like despair.com.
Motivate people to do a good job.
Here it is. It's Derek Bailey at Los Techies. LosTechies.com.
Yeah.
Nice. Solid. Software development is not a Jenga game. With some a failed Jenga here. Wow. The single responsibility picture principle with a pretty intense looking Swiss Army knife that is wider than it is long. Then there's the open-closed principle with open chest surgery is not needed when putting on a coat. These are really good. I need to make t-shirts of these. Would you solder a lamp directly to the electrical wiring in the wall? Dependency inversion principle. That is absolute brilliance. I'm going to link to that from the show site. Absolutely.
Yeah,
brilliant.
I thought this was pretty good stuff.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to hang these on my wall at some point.
Oh yeah, he says he's going to do high res versions. I think that it would be a crime if he did not. You should put these in your next book or make license some what are they called postcards.
Oh yes.
Brilliant.
Oh well.
Well, maybe was this just a tempest in a teacup then?
I think so. Yes. And I doubt it would have really gotten to the level that it did if Joel hadn't said, "Well, it's some guy who hasn't written a lot of code." that one pushed my butt.
Yeah. All right. Well, I feel like we've unpushed them a little bit today then.
Oh, yeah. The whole episode, I think, turned out very well. I'm pleased that Joel and Jeff and I were able to have a very respectful and fun conversation.
Mm-hmm. Well, turning dramatically in a different direction, you said there's something about deployment you wanted to talk about?
Well, one of the issues that came up in Stack Overflow 41, Joel was asking me, now, you know, why would you do the single responsibility principle? You know, what's so great about that? And I said to him, well, you don't want to have modules which are attractors for many dependencies. So single responsibility principle says that a module should change for only one reason. You push out of it things to change for different reasons. You gather into it those things to change for the same reason. He says, well, why would you want to do that? He says, well, if you don't do that, you have all of these dependencies impinging upon this one module. And if you change that module, many other modules have to change. And he asked me this question, what do you mean change? Change at runtime? And I said, no, change at compile time. If the source code changes, if the features change, then if you have a module that attracts many different dependencies, then many different kinds of feature change will force you to modify that module. And that's a problem because that module will thrash. It will have to get rebuilt all the time. You'll have to redeploy it all the time. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, what's the matter with that? And I said, well, if you're redeploying it all the time, that means you've got to re-release it and retest it. And if it's in its own separate jar file, it means you've got to redeploy the jar file. I probably should have said DLL in his case, but
sure.
Jar file. He said, well, when I ship a project, I just bundle all the stuff together and ship it as one big package. I said, well, yeah, that's true. In many cases, we will do that. In fact, I do that with Fitness. I just take the whole thing and put it together in one package. But that doesn't mean I don't want to be able to independently deploy the individual pieces while I'm developing it. So, for example, if I had a team an organization of, say, five teams, I would like those teams to be able to work independently of each other. So I would like them to have the dependencies between them, the dependencies between the modules that they work on, very tightly controlled, so that each team can deploy its own stuff very independently of everybody else. And then, incidentally, at the end, I can package the whole thing up and ship it. But the whole development environment has been made much, much easier because these guys can independently deploy their own particular components. Even when we can bundle it all together into a single unit and deploy it, it's much nicer if we can deploy the individual bits within our environment instead of having to rebuild the whole thing and recompile the whole thing and retest the whole thing every single time. It also provides for a good plugin structure. So you can create a base module with a whole bunch of plugins, and those plugins can be independently deployed from the base structure. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing a lot of these kinds of plugin applications now that enjoy this kind of single responsibility principle benefit.
Well, and then when that gets larger, when it does all of the things that you described, you're looking at using all of the principles in tandem together.
Yeah. Well, if you're following those principles, what you're really doing is you're managing dependencies. All of those principles are about the management of dependencies between modules.
And did Joel find this controversial, or did this help answer his question?
No. It kind of just rolled off his back because he went on to the next point right away. And I wanted to bring it up here because I thought it really hadn't been completely discussed.
Okay. Interesting. Someone on Twitter, earlier I mentioned we were doing this show, and I've heard this from a loud minority, if we spent as much time discussing these principles as we did coding, .. Seems people think that folks are jawing too much about these principles when they need to be, as I said before, slapping the keyboard. That makes me feel like the stuff we were talking about at the beginning, where and actually Jeff is the expert about this. Jeff Atwood actually has asked the question, is it more fun to talk about software than it is to write software?
Oh, no. Not for me, anyway.
Not for you?
No,
all right,
no.
Well, I better let you get back to writing software then. All right. Well, Uncle Bob Martin, thanks so much for taking the time to sit down and chat with us here again on Hansel Minutes.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And you can follow Uncle Bob on Twitter, and I think your Twitter name is Uncle Bob Martin, is that correct?
That is correct, yeah.
All right. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'll see you again next week.